and defined exact dates.
Well, I know that. I know it's general. See, I know about Prince Hall.
The general.
Yeah, I know about Prince Hall. Mm-hmm. And I know about his establishment of the lodge and how all that came about. But the one I'm really concerned about is
this one. I would have to. Now, there's two men. I don't know whether they would know or not. They've been in. They were in long before I came. John Benham was a past master when I came into the lodge in 1943. Mm-hmm. And John Reed.
John Reed? Oh, yeah. He's pretty sick, man. Yeah. I'd be able to get big out of John Reed.
He might not. He might not because... now, those are... Let's see. John Reed... John Bannon were in when I come in. Now, of course, I was a young man then at that time.
You know my wife.
How do you do?
Fine. How are you?
Pretty good.
Mr. Clare.
Yeah, that's all right. Just sit. No, I'll tell you. I was coming across and I could not help you say something about knowing getting this Prince Hall.
Yeah.
My father was amazing. But I know nothing about masonry. I have a son-in-law who is a Shriner.
Go ahead.
As I say now, I guess the oldest past master that we have is John Benham. Mm. That is, alert now and everything else. As you say, Brother Reed is, he was a member, but kind of on the alien side and everything else. There could be others that have searched, farther than I have, as far as masonry itself is concerned. Mm-hmm. But what you want to know is about Ypsilanti.
I'm just concerned about the Ypsilanti group.
Now, they're getting stronger. They're a lot stronger now than they used to be when I was in there, because there's a lot of different things to handle. There's a lot of young ideas come into everything, just like education grows, so does masonry. And you'll find those kind of things that men that come in, young men that come in, but the only thing keeps things going is young men. Just like the Army, no young men in the Army, you don't have any.
So I was interested in one thing you said. Now, you were saying that it used to be that this was not a Prince Hall.
Now, at one time it was.
They
had a Masonic group.
It must have gotten away because it was Prince Hall in 1870.
Not here. Not in Ipsy.
Well, I can't guarantee that, but I don't have that file here. Up on campus, I have that clipping out of an 1870 newspaper. In which, the guy who was the first principal of Adams School. And it specifically says principal. So that, really, for a long time, Prince Hall was the only one I knew.
Well,
I found out that there were some others.
Uh-huh. Well, and there's still some others.
Yeah.
As far as that goes. But, now, I don't want you to quote me on this, because a man that was belonged at the same time my father did, of course he was in France all Mason, and he was the master of St. Andrew's Lodge at one time, he told me that at one time that lodge wasn't Prince Hall affiliated, but they changed over. I don't know what went on in the meantime. I don't know what went on to cause that change.
Yeah, yeah,
but he told me, and you might know his daughter, Arthur Carter, he's dead now, but his daughter, Viola Carter, her father, told me that at one time that when they changed to Prince Hall, and he was a member of the other lodge here then.
Well, he came here in 1904.
Well, he was a member of the other lodge here then.
At least that's what Miss Carter tells us, that her father brought them here to live in 1904. Now, that was still some 30 years from the time of the article that I had. And I have to admit, that's the only one I've run across. It's just a little small item in the Ypsilanti paper, I think the Ypsilanti Commercial, which points out that
he told me they had changed.
Yeah.
From the lives that they had then until Prince Hall Masonry.
Well, in, it was around 1870, 1872, this guy was elected to the state. And they were quite proud, at least it seems folks who were writing the paper were quite proud of the fact that one of their blacks should be honored by this state position. It was somewhere, I can't remember the exact dates, but it was somewhere around 1870, 1872.
And I can always remember that place, that building. It used to face on Buffalo. And at that time, it was a Good Samaritan Hall. That's what they called it. There used to be some Good Samaritan.
Building that's there now.
Yeah.
It used to face on Buffalo, and you turned it around.
We turned it around. When
approximate date of that?
That was
approximation.
It was in the 40s. Because I was raised in the, when it was turned that way. So it was, had to be in the 40s, 43, 44, somewhere along
during
there.
The
during the war. Mm-hmm. It was during the war that it was changed. Mm-hmm. And they got the people that had the deeds and everything to that property to sign it off to Ruth Chapter and St. Andrew's Lodge.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
That's the reason it's under two of them now.
I see.
Other than that, it would have been only, you know.
Yeah.
But the building was given to us.
Oh.
By the former owners. I guess they had, they used to call it Good Samaritan Hall. That's what the organization, I guess, it belonged to. Mm-hmm. And the Masons used to meet there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And Eastern Stars used to meet there. But when the older people died off and everything, and they got fixed around so we could turn around, they were going to condemn the building.
Mm-hmm.
But the funny thing about the building had beams under it that big.
Oh, yeah?
That old lumber.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it hadn't even rotted or anything mm-hmm. else like that. And they're still under that building. That's what the building's sitting on now.
It's
those great big, tall beams.
It's well constructed.
Mm-hmm. So that's, it'll be on the cornerstone down there, whatever date I can remember now.
Well, I can get the information from the cornerstone. Now, is the cornerstone going to show me the date it was turned around or the date it was originally built?
That, let's see. No, it won't show the date it was originally built because
it'll
that bit belonged to.
Okay.
The
but it'll then. Show me the 1943 or whatever date that was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I think it'll show that. Now, I'll have to look at it and make sure because I don't remember just whether it was the date that they got they went into Prince Hall or whether it's the date that building was turned around.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll have to go down there and look at that and see. Make sure.
One of the things that interested me about that building, I have a picture of Brown Chapel before the old building was torn down. And that was around 1900.
Before the old building was torn down?
Yeah. See, the church that we're in now was completed in 1904.
Mm-hmm.
It started about 1901. But they had to tear the old building down, which was a frame building. And do you know those two buildings, that your building and our old church building looked very much alike?
it was an old building sitting over there.
Well, that's it really, they look very much alike.
It was an old building. Because I remember as a kid, as a child, my dad, we lived right around the corner from that, where it was now. We lived on Washington Street.
Uh-huh.
And I remember my father and them going over there to the hall.
Uh-huh.
And something I'll never forget because he was pretty well in masonry and, things like that. Uh-huh. And I guess as a boy, I kind of worshiped my father.
Oh, yeah.
Some degree there.
Is there And would I be breaking any laws or anything like that? If somehow I got my hands on as many, at least the recent past masters of the local group,
keep your hands on them. How do you?
Yeah. Know? Well, I just like to, in gathering this information for this history of Ypsilanti, history of the people of Ypsilanti. If I had a list of the people who have been the head of the lodge.
Oh no, 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 no! That wouldn't be breaking anything. That would be something I guess they would be proud of being a part of.
Then the other thing I'd like to have, if possible, if available, I would like to have the number of members out of the Ypsilanti Lodge who have become 32nd degree Masons.
You could get that. That would be no problem whatsoever.
Those are two things, because you see, I'm doing the kind of thing I'm doing. History is dull to a lot of people, yes. But I'm trying to enliven it with names.
But the only thing we could do then is, I just like, our temple of the Trine is in Jackson. Mm-hmm. The consistory of the 32nd degree is in Lansing.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we'd have to get hold of secretaries.
Oh, yeah.
Of each of those houses and, you know, get a list of the names.
Mm-hmm.
We could do that. Now, I think both of them live in Ypsilanti. I think both of them live in Ypsilanti.
That's interesting.
I mean, the secretaries of both those houses, I think, live in Ypsilanti.
Uh-huh.
And I think that would be quite possible. That would be quite possible to do that. You could get a list of the masters, past masters, and those that are living, those that are dead. Well, probably couldn't get all of them dead now because some of them are so old that some of them don't even remember.
Yeah, right.
But I think you could get a list of the living masters, life members, and everything else that belongs. And what I mean, you wouldn't be breaking anything.
Well, I'm not after getting into any secrets.
No, there wouldn't be no secrets.
But I'm I just want to show.
They would be glad to let everybody know they were.
Well, see, that's all I want to show. Mm-hmm. I want to show, and I know this. I mean, this is just a matter of fact. I mean, I'm not the youngest man in the world either, but I know that though I have never been a Mason, or I have never been in any kind of. I know some of the things that they have done.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, just like churches, they have played a very important part in molding our communities into what they are now.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to recognize that as a part of the developing Ypsilanti. That's good and simple. And now I'm on the, there's a woman over in Ann Arbor who's supposed to be giving me some information on the formation of the Elks here. I understand they organized here around 1897. And this woman is not that old, but she evidently has some information about her father. And they too have played a part in this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I'm interested in them, and of course I'm also interested in such things as Palm Leaf Club.
Oh, yeah, that's one of the oldest. I had a great aunt that belonged to the Palm Beach Club.
Who was that?
Mary Jones.
Oh, yeah. I got a nice little history of Palm Beach. Because my wife went to you. But the Palm Beach Club is one, and then, of course, at one time they had the Junior Palm Beach Club.
Yeah.
I found out something this fast about them. And they have had helped an awful lot of people through scholarships. That's been a big contribution. But there's just all kinds of things that have gone on in the community. As I have asked people questions, I've tried to find, what do people do for recreation? What do people do? And a lot of different things. I learned yesterday about a guy who fooled his wife by he went and got a slave one cold day, and he went over to his wife's, to his girlfriend's house, had a sleigh and had a horse pulling it. And this guy isn't as old as I am, but he said he thought his wife, his girlfriend would enjoy it. And he said he got the wagon, I mean the sleigh and the horse, and he went over to pick up the girl and says her parents just made fun of him. And he said he always felt so bad because he thought he was doing something nice and they laughed at him. And so when she came in, I said, by the way, what do you think about this when he came and picked you up in that sleigh? I thought it was the nicest thing since I've been visiting myself. And it was her idea, as opposed to her parents. She said, but my parents just made fun of it.
Well, I remember as a kid, we used to have those around here.
Yeah.
And, when the snow fell, the bobsleds and everything else were just up and down the streets. And yeah, as a kid, I enjoyed myself, you know, here. There was different things to do now, just like a lot of things that I can remember as a child. And if the things went on, because things aren't like they are today. And people, you know, they were at home together all the time. There wasn't any place else to go. I mean, there wasn't anything doing, so I mean, you stayed home and enjoyed your family and things like that. And for some reason or other, I always admired my father.
Was his name same as yours?
No, his name was Paul.
Well, that's what your
Paul Iclay.
Oh, Paul Iclay.
His name was Paul Isonclay.
Ison?
Mm-hmm. Ison.
I-S-O-N?
And my brother under me, and my brother next to me, he has his middle name. His name is James Ison.
Oh, I see.
But my name is William Paul.
I see, yeah.
And I was named after his dad, my mother's dad, and him.
Oh.
Both of my grandfather's names were William.
Oh, yeah.
And he gave me his middle name. At the time, my parents were living in Pontiac. My dad used to come all the way to Ipsy to work. So he couldn't get home only on the weekend.
Yeah.
He'd come here in Ipsy and work,
mm-hmm.
and then he would come back to Pontiac on the weekend. Well, I was born on a Tuesday.
Oh, boy.
So when I got back, my mother had already named me, and the doctor had my birth certificate made up and everything else. Like, I guess it didn't sit up with him too well, being the oldest boy and everything like that, being, well, named after his dad, my mother's dad, and him. But
when were you born, by the way?
Hmm?
When were you born?
December 12, 1916.
My wife is September 12, 1916.
Yeah.
September 12, 1916. What was your mother's name?
Virginia Scott.
Virginia Scott.
Yeah, Virginia Scott. They were from out of county.
That was my next question. Did they come over here from county?
I don't know how my dad met her, but he was born in Indiana.
Oh, yeah.
But anyhow, he was up in Canada. I guess he went to Canada because my grandfather was operating a logging camp in Canada. And he was a brick mason. So he moved, there was more money in that, so he moved his family from Canada down to Pontiac. He was a brick mason, and he was making good money then. Mm-hmm. But my dad, his parents, now his mother, was his grandmother, she was from Dublin, Ireland.
Oh.
His father's mother.
Mm-hmm.
And her father owned a tug of fleet boats on the Mississippi River.
Hmm.
He had told us about this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He, other than that, he acquired his eyes from her because he had pretty blue eyes, you ever seen. Yeah. And, but, you know, the way those things happen. And I never could understand why people make such a difference, or why they try to make such a difference. Because if they go back, there might be some skeletons in their closet.
Yeah, I've heard. I picked up some rumors of a few around here. No, we all have those.
I could never understand why just people can't get along with people and forget everything else and just live as people.
Part of it, of course, is the history. Part of it is that. You knew already that slavery was not new. When they brought it to the United States, it wasn't new.
Well, they've been slaves ever since the world.
Right. We had slaves in the Bible. But you never had the vicious slavery.
No.
Anyway. It was the most vicious, most degrading type of slavery that ever existed. And it was a kind of slavery in which it was planned in such a way that they would destroy whatever past we had. They planned it so that we would not know anything, that we would gradually lose all knowledge of our ancestry, of our home country. Most of that, we know nothing about it. We were cut away from everything that we had. And then, not only that, but they then taught us systematically to eat our own back. And right now, one of the most difficult parts, well, he lived through that age, one of the most difficult things in the world, turn that thing around so that black people can be proud of it. So many of us aren't. And there's still people around who really are ashamed of their background. And that's what kind of slavery is about. And we're just now trying to go back, and isn't that going back sometimes gets right funny. We try to go back to pick it up and be proud. I often say, our parents had a tough time. Because they were, at home, they were telling us to be proud of ourselves. My mother used to say, you're a man, you're just as good as anybody else. And she was trying to drill that into me. Yet when I'd go out on the street, I'd have to, if I went to the white man's house, I had to go to the back door. If I went to work for him, I had to take less money. If he wanted to bawl me out or knock me down, push me off the sidewalk, spit in my face, he could do it. If I lived in the South and got on a streetcar, there was a sign, go to the back. For everything designed to degrade us. And yet, in many cases, our parents were able to overcome all of that and make us feel proud as men. And you know, and they didn't have any kids either. My mother had about 3 grade kids, and yet she didn't get that. And I tell you, I often say that I've known a lot of smart people. I've known people who have lots of education. I've known people who have built institutions, like Mary McLaughlin, people like that. But I have never yet really known a woman who was smarter than me.
No, not with those ideas that you had.
No, no, never. Now, I didn't say smarter. Mm-hmm. I said, I'm not saying my mother was smarter than me.
No.
But my mother was just as smart in her way as they are.
old enough to...
And she's not the only one.
Not to help you.
Yeah, she's not the only one. Because I'm not the only one that has, you know, that's been able to do something. Mm-hmm. There are lots of people who have that same kind of pride. I came up proud, standing tall, and I was taught that if white folks do these things to you, they do them out of ignorance. They were the ones who were ignorant, not you. Mm-hmm. And my mom used to tell me, come home crying, you know, sometimes, what the white folks would do. And she'd wipe the tears away, and she'd sit down and explain. And you end up, man, you're 10 feet tall. And that took a special kind of something.
Right.
And see, I grew up in, well, Oklahoma until I was 14 and then to Missouri. And I finished college in Missouri, and that's when I really started branching out. But you see, all this freedom, I keep reminding these young folks, all this freedom that they know now didn't come until that after the 50s. That really didn't come until Martin Luther King.
And they're not protecting it a bit. Some of
No.
Some of them are making it worse. And, I mean, you can't tell. Now, I can, as I say now, I grew up in this town. I never knew some of the things that, you know, kids that, you know, come out of the South or something like that, said they had to do. I never had to go through those kind of things. Because at the time, before the war, Ipsy was a small town. There wasn't too many people here. And you went where you wanted to, and you get the growing pains, as they say for a lot of towns. They get the growing pains, people come in, white and black, I don't care who the other darn with. Well, and they make things bad for everybody. Then they start, you know, changing things around. And I can say that the war did that to Ipsy. I don't know, it's a hard thing to understand why, and just like I tell these kids today, get out here, you don't want to learn anything, you don't want to do this, you don't want to do that. Who do you think is going to take care of you? If you don't want to learn anything, you don't want to get, you don't want a job, you don't want to work.
Yeah.
Who's supposed, so-and-so supposed, I've seen these kids down here, I guess it's been 5 or 6 years ago, I guess, when they had that first, they had down there.
Down the park.
Bound the park.
Yeah.
All right, here's a man of South Alabama. He's got 300 years of pressure on him. He ain't lived 300 years. How's he going to have 300 years of pressure? He don't even know what it's all about.
That's what's good.
But he wants something for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you give it to him, what's he going to do with it after he gets it?
The kind of job that I got in Washington, swinging a mop, or maybe busting dishes. But that's the kind of work I had. But that wasn't to be my lifetime work. That was just get me to the next step. But these kids don't want to even do that. They want room from nothing way up to the top.
Mm-hmm. he don't know what he's doing when he gets there.
That's right. I tell them all the time. Now they up on campus. Kids see me, you know, and they figure, well, big man. But they don't ever stop and think of how long it took me to get that. That's something I tell them. When I came here, I had never even dreamed of working in an institution. Because all my life I had lived black, I had slept black, my friends were black, all my associates were black, so I thought black and lived black. And then suddenly, and at the time I came here, I was working at Lincoln in Missouri. I had a budget to run my operation of $150,000, and I had a total of 9 people, which included my secretary, and add those to me. I had a total of 10 people, and that was my total operation, $150,000 a year. The first year I had, when I came here in 1969, I had a budget of almost $2 million. I had a staff of 95, and in my office, I didn't have one secretary, I had 2 secretaries. That's when I came here. Now, they see you in this thing, and they figure, oh, he got it made. I was struggling inside, wondering if I was adequate, wondering if I could call on everything I'd ever learned in my life to apply to this situation, recognizing all the time and always remembering that that guy on the other side of that table is seeing black. He may be smiling in your face, but when he looks at you, he doesn't see what you see. You are looking at his face and seeing a white face. He's looking at you and seeing a black face. And if he's been oriented that way, he hates you because you are where you are. You are ahead of him, and he doesn't like it. And the first chance he gets to cut your throat, he won't do it. And I'm always aware of that. I come together with my staff. And when I got here, I think it was about 3 or 4 blacks on the staff. Out of that large number, there's 3 or 4 blacks. I'd have a staff. You can hear all these white faces looking at me. No white man talking. I'm quite aware. They look at me, they're seeing something black. But when I'm looking at them, it's easy for me to forget that I'm black because I'm seeing white. And I'm saying, oh, I'm just one of them. Mm-hmm. And it ain't so. It still ain't so.
No.
It doesn't mean that you dwell on it.
No,
but it's just one of those things I think you got to remember. Got to remember it and never forget it. And this is exactly what Porter says. Porter says to me, now, you know, of course, he did for me. He married a white woman.
Well, here's the thing about it. Just like I, you know, my son now, he's been a councilman.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he's working for the state now.
Mm-hmm.
But there's only one thing you can forget. That you don't never forget. Because that white man is there.
Mm-hmm.
Now you got to fight him.
Yeah, right. Sure.
But you got to fight your own along with him.
That's right.
You got a double battle.
You know, just hear him talk about George.
Mm-hmm.
Don't even know what George does.
You got a double battle.
He not only got the white folks to fight, he come right back over here and fight these blacks.
Mm-hmm. See, I mean, that's what makes the battle so hard for a black man.
Well, it's one thing about me, it's not as bad now.
No, a long way from it. You can put it on, say that, it's been a long,
yes.
I hope it gets better.
I think.
But sometime I look out there and I see, you know.
Sometimes it's hopeless, isn't it?
It looks like it might be a losing battle, but I mean, you can't let it go that way, mm-hmm. because it's mm-hmm. still got to fight. I don't care what happens. And as I read in the paper today, now they figure in another 20 years, Hispanics will be the majority of non-whites in the country. And you're going to have to get along with, you have to get along with everybody. Mm-hmm. They're all making up this population that we got, whether they're Chinese, Japs, or whatever they are. Mm-hmm. And I can always look back and say this, that they haven't, during World War II, as soon as Japan got in the war, put them all in those concentration camps. They were concentration camps, I don't care what they call them.
That's what they were.
They didn't have the ovens and everything else like that. But he didn't put them Germans in there.
Sure did. Let's stuck those Japanese in that cold look.
So the best thing you can do is, try to educate them. Try to make them learn something. You can't get nothing out here if you don't know anything.
Most of those people off of that land. We draw most of them off. We use that, and those hook machines up to those computers and make whatever it is they make. They make those cars. Mm-hmm. Now, I can understand how they're saying that within the next 2-3 years, they can cut off 500,000 men and still get along making cars. And it's all because of technology and how fast we're moving. That doesn't mean that 500,000 people can go without work. It just means that they got to know how to do something else. And they got to be a little bit more technical than our generation was. They got to grow with the times. And that means that you and my children and grandchildren are going to have to know how to do a little bit more than drive a nail. Or put in a screw, but they're going to have to know how to figure where the nail goes and how to feed it into the computer and then let the computer do it.
That's the one thing I can, kind of pride myself in. Mm-hmm. For my boy, after he graduated from high school, he went into service. Mm-hmm. So he used to write me all, write back and forth and everything. I say, you're in service, try to get you some classes in there to do something. Mm-hmm. And so he finally got some classes in Boston Institution up there. Mm-hmm. But they wouldn't work. They come back to colleges here, and I said, now when you get out of the service, I said, don't need no dummies out here. I said, you got your GI Bill, go to school. Mm-hmm. Learn something.
That they can't take away from.
No. So he went on, and of course, I guess it helped him wind up with the job he's getting today. Mm-hmm. And because, as I say, there's no room. They don't need no dummies.
No room for
them. Yeah, they got robots that can do better than that.
That's right. And they don't get tired. They don't have to get tired right on bathroom. Working.
Just keep right on working.
They don't have to give them 15 minutes to go to the bathroom take lunch break. You don't have to do any of that.
It's pitiful because we can't. The kids that drop out of schools today just drop out, because they smoking pot, whatever they're doing. Yeah. And that seems to be about the biggest thing it is they have going for them now. And if you say something about school,
true.
They don't want to hear nothing about that.
Mm-hmm.
One day they might wake up, though.
Yeah.
I hope they wake up before it's too late.
Well, listen, if you could do me a favor, you would do me a favor, Mr. Clay. If you would, man.
Man used to be postmaster before Cy got in there. Mm-hmm. Dawson. Mm-hmm. Martin Dalton. Now there was something about him somewhere, about his people in this town, the Dawson family. They were old, about what he did for blacks in this town, what his people did. No, there was nothing. But one thing I can say is, I guess we wouldn't be where we are today if it wasn't for whites being, some of them being as liberal and as good as they are and not believing in, you know.
Well, we were at their mercy. We were really at their mercy in those early days. Like some small still. I remember Donnie Barfield says, yeah, I'm doing pretty good financially. He said, but you know something I don't ever let myself forget? He says, the minute John Motors wants to pull the rug out from under me, they can do it. And he's right. They just happen to like him.
That's one of those things. Everybody ain't like people think they are.
Right. And they could change hands. And get a new president, John Morris. And he could decide, who this guy thinks he is. And pull the rug out from under him and he could go. But he's quite aware of that.
Oh, yeah.
He's quite aware.
And now, Johnny, I mean, now there's some blacks that don't like Johnny.
I know it. He's successful.
Yeah.
He's successful.
And I've been knowing Johnny ever since he was a kid, you know. A lot younger than I am. I've been knowing him ever since he was a kid. And he's always been the same.
Yeah. No, there's always going to be people that like you. I got believe it or not, when I came out of high school, there were people who were just determined that I was going to go away to college. And they did everything they could to get me to go. And I remember finally now, since I sat up in my principal's office, he called the principal, called the president of this institution, and said, I got a boy here who wants to go to college but doesn't have any money at all. Well, he says, I tell you what we can give you. He said, what can he do? And my principal said, well, he's been working in the library for 4 years here in the high school. He said, I tell you what, I'll give him a job working in the library, and we can give him his room and board. That's the biggest thing we got in college, room and board.
That's about the biggest thing today.
That's right. That's right. Three squares and a place to lay your head. That's nothing else. Well, anyway, they fool around and called somebody else. Pretty soon they've gotten up enough money. My church passed the hat, took up a little collection for me. The next thing you know, I was heading for college. Well, to make a long story short, after I got out, I said, well, now I want to go back in and help my brother and sister. My sister didn't have it. My brother started the other thing. It was a heartbreaking thing. But they had to tell me. I thought I was better than them. With the help of my black people, which are overcoming. I think I'm closer to it any other time. But that was an awful thing. And yet I had taken it. When I went to work, I had my family was still learning from Kansas. And I told them this. Why didn't you do after my wife and I, but I had a family of my own.
No.
I got a nephew now, you know. I'm a father now, I'm in Georgia. What you doing? Wish my sister lived in Washington. She couldn't do it, but she stayed with me. We found it through, we finally finished the University of Michigan. But, we did. She had a daughter,
I mean, those things, if you mean well, good things will come to you.
Yeah. I always say, Ruth, not bullshit. God has walked with us. He has. Mr. Clay.
You can't leave him up.
All of my life, I have been richly walked.
Somebody pick you up and something pick you up. And
at times I lose this. I get up and I worry about things sometimes. But he really has. I'm thankful. I'm so very thankful. See, my father died when I was 10. So it was just my mother. So I'm struggling along with your chips. And wow, my father was kind of a share problem. I could have been a share problem. The Lord didn't see that.
He played a big part.
And he's going to be 29.
Well,
if you do that for me, mister.
But, well, you're not, you're not in no big hurry.
No. My research goes up until the end of September. Anything that I gather, if I get, talking about these pictures that I was talking about, what I'd like to do with pictures that I borrow, I will copy it and give them back to you. In other words, I don't want to use your picture. I'd like to make a copy of that, and that'll give me a look at it.
Well, I'm going to have to see if I can, you know, any pictures I can run up on.
Yeah, okay.
There's none that I know of, you know.
Well, I just want you to be on the lookout.
Okay. In case anyone else takes some or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't think I know they have more pictures than that. Now, every 4th of July, usually the Bug and American Legion and these guys that have these bands running trucks and everything.
Yeah.
They give something down to Park Ridge. They have hot dogs and ice cream and stuff for the kids, you know, to give away to them.
Picture like that.
And,
that's activity. That's showing what you're doing.
Something that...
Do you ever give any Christmas baskets? You may not have pictures of that kind of activity.
No, we haven't so far. Now, usually, usually that would come with shriners give to transfer funds and stuff like that. They have more or less a bigger affair because it takes in more cities and things like that than it does one good localized. As I say now, I'm a little rusty on some things because working like I'm working now, I haven't been able to spend my life like I'd like to. Getting up 4 o'clock in the morning is kind of rough. And I have no intention of retiring anyway soon. As long as I can keep going, I mean, the way the price is going like that, I can't afford to retire. And,
but I retired in last summer. When I got my tax bill, I was going up there. That's my time. My insurance is going up too. Because the evaluation of the property's gone. But my income didn't go up.
That's it. That's something else. I mean, what do you think they're going like that? They're just going to, I mean, people don't know what they're going to do. They've got to put an end to it somewhere. I mean, just like they say with the golden negotiating contracts and everything, don't ask for more wages.
Yeah.
But they don't stop that man from raising the prices that's out there. Right. They don't give you any more money, but they let him go on and keep raising the prices. I see where the water's going to go up again March the 1st. Mm-hmm.
The week when you go to the store, the groceries are going up. Everything goes up. Everything goes up.
They don't. They never try to keep nothing in line with a man's income. Try to give those benefits to people who retire. Well, they aren't giving anything. No incentive for them to retire. Making new jobs. How are you gonna make a new job when a man can't live on what he's making?
Yeah.
You know, if he retires, his income drops. Something else. I don't know what. We'll see what the cowboy does, as they call it.
Yeah.
it's been a bad thing. Only one thing I can say is the man that might have stabilized everything to kill
him. Yeah.
Might have been something, maybe it was before his time.
Well, I decided also that this country has gone through a lot of ups and downs. But every time there comes a crisis, it's like if something happens to settle it down.
Yeah. It does that.
And there's still a God in hell.
He looked out after this country for all these years.
That's
I guess there must be too many good people here.
That's
or something.
Right. Something. I still say that the God in heaven, man, he sees the same thing, and I feel that whenever he is ready,
they have troubles everywhere. They never have troubles here like they have anywhere else in the world.
That's right. And that's another thing. You think we're bad off, look at some of them.
And it ain't race riots either.
No.
That's the thing about it, huh? They're fighting each other.
Okay.
Still, we seem to come out on top some kind of way. Might have little ups and downs and things like that, but we get straightened out some kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess maybe he said, well, this is my country or something.
Still the first country, but bad as it is.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at that African background, they ain't like the United States. They ain't free. They not as free as we are.
That's for sure. So they're fighting among themselves.
That's right. They killed each other all.
I don't know. I'll stay here.
I'm in too. Me too. Yes, sir.
I'm not going anywhere.
I ain't going nowhere. I do appreciate you coming over.
Okay.
And
I'm looking out for him.
I'm going to get what I can for you, all the information I can get.
Okay.
Maybe some way we can get it up, set it up, sometime or whatever.
Okay, well, anyway, whatever I come up with, I will,
things like that.
Well, I can't, next time I'm going to take my book, I'll take that.